If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
The Justice Department is suing Google, what it could mean for the broader tech sector. And the U.S. is leaning towards sending Abrams tanks to Ukraine. Could a deal ease tensions among allies in Europe?
It was important not only to speed the flow of armor to Ukraine at this point in the conflict, but also to quickly staunch this division and disarray within the alliance.
Plus, it's a strong jobs market, and if you're on the hunt, we've got some resume tips. It's Tuesday, January 24th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The U.S. Justice Department has filed an antitrust lawsuit against Google, alleging the company abuses its monopoly power in the ad tech industry, hurting web publishers and advertisers who try to use competing products. Our tech reporter Sam Schechner has the details.
The United States has just sued to break up a business that brought in about 12% of Google's revenue in 2021, or nearly $32 billion. This is Google's business that brokers the buying and selling of ads on other websites and apps. And it's a significant part of the company, one that people close to the company say not only brings in revenue, but helps make them a one-stop shop for advertising. And it's a serious allegation. Effectively, the Justice Department is alleging that Google's control of the biggest ad server, that is a platform for websites to request bids on their ads, and one of the biggest platforms for advertisers to spend money on digital ads, and crucially, the exchange, kind of like the auction house where the two sides connect, is like a giant conflict of interest. It's a conflict of interest that the Justice Department says that Google is manipulating to direct itself fees, snuff out rival technologies, and that leads to higher prices for digital ads and less money for publishers.
Google denies those allegations and has said it does not plan to sell or exit the ad tech business. Sam says the DOJ's case could have big implications for the digital ad industry.
The DOJ is asking a court not just to fine Google or to stop what it alleges to be anti-competitive behavior. It's asking for the court to order Google to divest its platform for publishers, its ad server, and its ad exchange. Those are the biggest in the business, so mechanically that would change the entire digital ads ecosystem. What impact that would have is another question, and one that, you know, will take potentially years of litigation to sort out. Some in the ad tech business say it could actually help publishers. Others say it might actually hurt them.
Lawmakers and regulators are targeting other tech companies for their dominance in online markets, too, both in the U.S. and abroad. Lawyers for former Vice President Mike Pence say they've discovered classified material at his Indiana home. That's according to a letter his representative sent to the National Archives. The letter says Pence wasn't aware of the existence of the documents, which it says were, quote, inadvertently boxed and transported. The letter says the documents were collected by the FBI. It's the third disclosure of classified documents being uncovered at the home or office of a current or former senior executive branch official. Attorney General Merrick Garland has appointed a special counsel to look into the handling of classified documents at former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home, and a separate special counsel to review how classified material ended up at President Biden's home and former office. Microsoft today reported its slowest sales growth in more than 6 years. Revenue rose 2% last quarter from a year earlier to $52.7 billion. The results come as demand has fallen for software and cloud services. Microsoft has been betting on future demand for artificial intelligence. On Monday, it announced a new multi-billion dollar investment in OpenAI, the company behind the viral text generator ChatGPT. At the same time, Microsoft is among a wave of big tech companies to announce sizable layoffs in recent months. Last week, the company said it plans to cut 10,000 jobs, its biggest round of job cuts in more than 8 years. And Everything Everywhere All at Once leads the pack of nominees for this year's Academy Awards with 11 nods, including for Best Picture and Best Actress for its star Michelle Yeoh. Also among the 10 Best Picture nominees are The Banshees of Inisherin, The Fabelmans, Tar, and Top Gun Maverick. The Oscar winners will be announced on Sunday, March 12th. Coming up, the U.S. could announce the delivery of tanks to Ukraine as early as this week, meeting a condition set by Germany to send more of its own tanks. Details after the break.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
An end to political wrangling over sending military tanks to Ukraine could be in sight. We report exclusively that the Biden administration is leaning towards sending a significant number of U.S.-made Abrams tanks to Ukraine. U.S. officials say a formal announcement could come this week. Berlin has made that a condition for sending its own Leopard 2 tanks, as well as approving the delivery of German-made tanks by Poland and other allies. The episode has exposed an unusual rift over Ukraine among Western allies. Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal national security correspondent Michael Gordon. Hi, Michael. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
So, Michael, as we've now learned and you've been reporting, according to U.S. officials, the Biden administration is leaning towards sending those U.S.-made Abrams tanks to Ukraine. That would meet the condition Germany had made for sending its own tanks. What can you tell us about what happens next here?
Well, there was an internal debate within the Biden administration where the Pentagon was really reluctant to send Abrams because of the logistical complexities in maintaining and operating them, their fuel guzzling. And so what they really preferred was a division of labor where Germany would either send its own Leopards or allow Poland, Finland, and Denmark and other nations to send Leopards they had bought from Germany, or all of the above. But in the State Department and in the White House, with this issue casting a shadow really over the unity of the alliance, it was decided in effect to call the Germans bluff and commit to sending a significant number of Abrams. Ukraine's going to have lots of different tanks and face the challenge of operating a really diverse armored fleet.
Right. Tell us a bit more about those logistics in place to support the German-made Leopard tanks and the U.S.-made Abrams tanks. Is that going to require more equipment being sent to Ukraine, or what's your sense of how that looks on the battlefield?
Well, one reason the Americans favored the Leopards for Ukraine is it was thought they were much more easy to maintain. They're plentiful in Europe, and so Ukraine could access them in great numbers. They're already there. Abrams tanks can be operated by foreign governments. The Iraqis have Abrams tanks, but they also have a whole lot of contractor support to keep them up and running. And the feasibility of putting American and Western contractors in a war zone in Ukraine to keep the logistical machine running is, I think, in question. But essentially, the Pentagon's reservations have been trumped by a decision that we expect to come shortly from the White House officially.
If Ukraine is able to meet these operational challenges, is this supply of these tanks something that might help turn the tide of the war as we approach the one-year mark since Russia invaded Ukraine?
There's no one weapon system that is a silver bullet that can turn the tide of this war. But the idea is Ukraine is preparing a fairly ambitious counteroffensive to take back territory that it's lost to the Russians. And they also want to move south and try to sunder the land bridge that runs from Rostov, Russia, through Mariupol, basically to the Crimean Peninsula. So it needs offensive armored punch. So the tanks themselves would be an important ingredient in any looming Ukrainian counteroffensive, and they would also have utility in pushing back on a Russian offensive since Putin has ordered a new mobilization and has his own operations in mind.
Michael, what has this rift told us about the strength of the NATO alliance? Is it something we expect to persist among the allies even beyond this particular issue with the tanks?
The reason the issue with the Leopard tanks was so salient is it really was the first instance in which there was open dissension among the United States and its partners about how to help Ukraine. Now, heretofore, everybody's been saying, well, the alliance is pretty unified. There have been tensions. I mean, the East European countries always want to do more. There have been important weapon systems the U.S. is still withholding from Ukraine, including ATACMS long-range missiles and air power, something the U.S. is still withholding from Ukraine, aircraft and the like. But here was a case where the U.S. believed the Leopard should be sent. Poland believed the Leopard should be sent. In fact, it got so intense that at one point the Poles were saying, well, wait a second. We know we got the tanks from Germany. We know that under our legal agreement, we can't transfer them without your permission, but we may just go ahead and do that because the situation is so challenging for the Ukrainians. We may just move ahead And that raised the rupture, not only of a war of words, but really a bit of disarray and confrontation between Poland and Germany. So it was important not only to speed the flow of armor to Ukraine at this point in the conflict, but also to quickly staunch this division and disarray within the alliance.
What does this tell us, Michael, about the ability or the appetite for the West to continue supplying Ukraine with weapons?
The West has come a long way. You have to recall that at the very beginning, it was a step for the U.S. to even provide Stinger anti-aircraft missiles. And they've gone from really short-range tactical systems, Javelin anti-tank, Stinger anti-air, to systems like the Patriot anti-missile system, which is promised, but still months away from delivery. But throughout, the Biden administration has been extremely concerned about avoiding escalation into a direct U.S.-Russian conflict. So what it's drawn the line on are weapon systems that can reach deeply into Russian Federation territory. Hence, it's refrained from providing ATACMS missiles. Without ATACMS long-range surface-to-surface missiles, it's very hard for Ukraine to reach deep into Crimea and hit Russian targets there, even though Crimea is legally a part of Ukrainian territory. So a question for the future is, does the tank's decision suggest that other weapon systems that have previously been considered too risky to provide by the Biden administration, but not by some former U.S. military officials, like the ATACMS, will they now be on the table as this conflict goes forward? Because Vladimir Putin has made it clear through his actions that he's not immediately interested in a negotiation, that he's intending to mobilize and put more of his soldiers on the battlefield, and that he envisions a long-term grinding war of attrition to wear down Ukraine and try to gain an advantage.
Our national security correspondent, Michael Gordon. Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And finally, despite all the talk of a possible recession, the job market remains strong. And if you're thinking of looking for a new job, you might want to revisit your resume. Michelle Reisdorf from the staffing services firm Robert Half has looked at thousands of resumes in her career. She tells our As We Work podcast that writing one can be challenging, but you can give yourself a good head start by keeping track of your accomplishments in a kudos folder.
It's hard to just sit down in front of a computer and create a resume, especially when you're entry level. But you'd be surprised at how many accomplishments, projects, things that you've been involved in or that you've done well, that when you've got it all put together, that you could sit down and build something with. That kudos folder will help a ton.
For more tips and tricks on building a resume that'll land you the interview, check out the latest episode of our sister podcast, As We Work. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.